The views and opinions expressed by guests on the TWBC podcast are solely those of the guest and do not necessarily reflect the views of nor constitute an endorsement by the host, TWBC, or the advertisers.
National championships, Confederation championships, World championships, major professional events. For over three decades, he has been there for many of the sport's greatest moments. And now he brings you even closer to the movers and shakers in the world of high echelon tournament water skiing. From the founder and creator of the Water Ski Broadcasting Company comes the TWBC Podcast. And now here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
All right, then. Greetings, salutations, one and all. This is the aforementioned Tony Lightfoot, and you are tuned in to the TWBC podcast. And great to have you on board, a special episode we have today, because for about the second time in less than 12 months, I have the privilege of talking to the International Water Ski and Wakeboard Federation Presidente, Jose Antonio Perez Priego. And I'll be asking him some questions on a whole variety of different issues. But let me first introduce you to Jose. How are you doing, sir?
Hi, Tony. Very nice to be part of your webcast again. Your podcast, sorry, again.
Okay, and I'm sure you'll be watching the webcast going on this summer as well with TWBC. So, you looking forward to the new season to come ahead?
Yes, of course. That's why I said the webcast. I hear your voice and I immediately picture somebody doing slalom. Yeah. Yes. Yes, you did an amazing job last season, and we're looking forward for this season.
Yes, indeed. A lot of optimism going forward from the IWWF World Water Ski Championships that were held at Sunset. You know, it's been a few months now since those championships took place in the best part of September. What has been the feedback from the athletes, officials, and the other stakeholders involved in putting on championships such as that?
Well, if you remember, last time we talked, it was at the Junior Worlds in at Pico's Cory Peak School, and then we just a couple of months after we had the World Championships. I think our team did an amazing job. All the IWWF team did an amazing job putting that tournament. The Travers family was incredible. They were a pleasure to work with. So for the first time, we actually ran the Worlds as it was my vision 4 years ago. We could do it in a proper venue and having the control of all the moving parts of a World Championship instead of basically contracting this to a third party. And I think it was very successful. The feedback for us has been amazing. I have been receiving compliments from left and right. The sponsors were thrilled. They want us back. They want us to do more tournaments in Florida every year. The economic impact for the community was amazing. So it was really, all in all, I couldn't have hope for a better outlook.
All right, then, with that in mind, now comes the unenviable task of actually finding a venue and an LOC that's supporting that venue for the next World Championships, which will be coming up in 2023. I'm sure a few hands are raised up with that in mind. But first of all, I mean, the actual bidding process and the actual hosting of the World Championships has changed significantly with the start of these World Championships, and it starts with the amount of money involved to actually throw a bid in towards the IWWF to host these World Championships, because to the best of my understanding, it's about $150,000 now, isn't it?
Yes. Well, I will not talk about specific numbers, but what I can tell you is that, yes, we basically changed the way we finance the Open World Championship. In the past, everything fell on the LOC, basically. And now we're sharing. We started a couple of years ago with the introduction of the the license, the international IWWF competition license, which has brought some resources into the IWWF, which were putting to lower the cost of organizing the World Championship, which that was part of the program. So what we have done is basically we have reduced the cost for the LOC in half. So before, you would have to spend a certain amount of money. Now you have to spend half of that. It is not feasible, and we are not looking for a specific club to raise their hand and say, I want to do it. That's not the way that we're not looking for that type of arrangement. What we look forward is a national federation say, okay, I want to do this tournament, and this is the venue I propose. And if the venue fulfills the technical requirements that we have now, like if you want to run a Formula One championship, okay, this is the racing course. If that meets our standards, then we can go ahead with that federation. And we are asking the federation to fund a sanction fee, which is about $150,000, as you said, which is not really a sanction fee. What we want to do is ask them, ask their local governments, their municipalities, their sport authorities, or a sponsor, or a rich patron, whomever, come up with that money, which that's what we need to run the tournament. The rest of the money, which is almost, is more than that, IWWF has been successful in generating that income, and we are confident that we can continue generating that income. So for the national federation or for the individual club, now the cost is less half or less than half of what it used to be for having a prime event. So this obviously creates more interest because now it's affordable, if you will, for many federations that in the past was completely unaffordable.
Yeah, even taking out of consideration, costs have gone up with a number of different things in response to geopolitical events, you know. So I mean, the whoever gets to host, who gets to send in that money towards you, you would spend that amount of money securing certain different aspects of the World Championships, whether it be officials, venues for Congress, and that kind of stuff. But is that amount of money going to be enough going forwards? What with the stuff going on around the world, or is that a fee going to be revised?
Well, obviously, as time progresses, there's been inflation and the figure needs to be revised. But I think for the next edition, we are confident that amount of money should suffice. I don't think, unless something more unforeseen than everything we've been seeing lately, it shouldn't need to be revised. We're confident that that's a conservative number that we can live with at least for the next edition.
Okay, that sounds reassuring going forward. Now, there's a lot, like I said, as I've alluded to, there's a lot of geopolitical events taking place around the world, and obviously most of the world's attention is focused in on Russia and Ukraine right now, and with that in mind, a lot of international sporting federations have come out right and have banned teams from Russia and Belarus, and have actually restricted athletes from formally representing their countries in events that these national sporting federations or international sporting federations have actually put in place. Now, the IWWF, under the recommendation, and it's important to stress that, under the recommendation of the IOC, has outright banned teams, athletes from Belarus and Russia from competing, which may not on the surface sound particularly, significant, but you take into account that Belarus is a major force in international water skiing, and taking into account the International Sporting Federation stance on allowing some Belarusian and Russian athletes to compete under a white flag, so to speak, the IWWF has taken it a stage further by outright banning them. Your comments on that?
Yes, well, we need to understand where we're coming from. The IOC recommended a ban on Belarusians and Russian athletes because of two things. The reason, the rationale behind this is not just a pure, you know, gut reaction. It actually makes a lot of sense. The first is that these two countries violated the UN Olympic truce, okay? So that is in direct violation to the UN Charter and to the Olympic Charter. Every year before the Olympics, the UN Security Council, and it's passed as a resolution, they have it's called an Olympic truce. So all hostilities around the world, either it become low level or outright stop. And right now, in the middle of this Olympic truce, Russia invaded Ukraine. So that was the first trigger. The second trigger is that, and this is what impacts us, really, because we're not part of the Olympics. The second trigger for the IOC was that it's not fair for Ukrainian athletes that have to stay home, risking their life. Some of them are dying. I don't know if you've seen that the kickboxing champion, world champion, just was killed 2 days ago.
Yeah, I saw that.
So the athletes are suffering physically and emotionally and financially, and they cannot come out and compete. So it's not fair for the aggressor countries' teams to just prance into the world stage like nothing is happening. You know, this is just an equalizer. So since we did agree as at the bureau level that these reasons were valid and that they were fair, we decided to listen to the recommendation of the IOC and ban athletes for these two countries. We don't have anything against the athletes. You know, I know personally a lot of them. Some of them have stayed at home in my lake in Tequesquitengo. So there's not. This is not a personal thing against any athlete in particular. You know, it's a signal that the sports community, which we are part of, needs to send that this cannot go on. This needs to stop. And cool heads need to prevail. You know, this is not acceptable that you just decide and invade your neighbor. So the little we can do about this, we need to do. And there are many other efforts going on, not just from the IWF, from every other federation, like the World Games Association, for example, has started a fundraiser to try to get out the athletes from Ukraine and bring them into the Birmingham World Games in a couple of in 3 months' time. So there's everybody's trying to come up with solutions to this, but the signal had to be sent. And unfortunately, a lot of innocent athletes from the Russia and Belarus are suffering. The same as innocent athletes from Ukraine are suffering, even they're paying with their lives, you know. So I don't see how we can balance this.
One way that many of the other international sporting federations have tried to balance it in short of outright banning athletes from Belarus and Russia in particular is they've created like a white flag type deal where those athletes, if they want to compete, fine, but you just have to sign something to say I'm no longer representing my country of origin, whether it be Russia or Belarus. I'll continue to ski under the white flag and basically take on the consequences thereafter. Was that ever considered into the mix whenever the vote was taken among the IWWF board members, so to speak?
Yes, it was considered, and we decided not to go that way because we do not want to harm or put in jeopardy the Belarusians or Russian athletes. If we make them sign that they renounce their country and they're against all of this, it will have consequences on their countries, on their families. So we have no right to do that. So we would not ask the athletes to speak ill of their governments. You know, if they feel that their government is not representing them, that's for them to decide. We cannot have them publish that because it had dire consequences on their family, on loved ones, and if they are in their countries, on themselves. So we didn't want to go that way. And in addition, there are not so many sports federations that are taking that approach. As far as I know, it's the larger federation that is doing that is just tennis. Most other federations are following the path that we follow.
I'm looking at tennis, which you mentioned. Cycling is another. FIA, which represents motorsport, Formula One in particular, swimming, and the rowing and taekwondo, archery has voted to remove the Russian and Belarusian national flags and anthems from international tournaments. Basically, what most of those are saying is while they're prepared to ban Russian and Belarusian teams from competing in tournaments, so far as individually is concerned, they've got a door open for them to at least compete under the white flag. But that's not a stance that you've just said that the IWWF has taken, purely from the point of view of trying to maintain safety between its athletes and their families and even federation officials, wouldn't you agree?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. This is also affecting officials of the highest quality, you know. Officials from those countries are, well, the same as the skiers. We have a world champion right now that is in this situation, and the same goes for the officials. They are top quality world level officials that cannot be part of the championships at this point. We hope this will end soon and will reverse course as soon as it's feasible. You know, this is not a ban forever. It should be, and we hope it should be a short one.
Yeah, I think everyone was figuring that this conflict wouldn't be prolonged for too much longer. But we're about to get into April right now, and this conflict has been going on for approaching 2-3 months now, you know. And unfortunately there doesn't appear to be an end in sight. And I spoke to Daniela Filchenko at least a couple of times already, and he tells me of the suffering that's going on right now, and the fact that he's having to put his skis to one side and basically help out the folks in Ukraine to survive this onslaught from Russia. You know, a lot of moving parts are going on, but taking that into consideration, you know, you kind of wonder a little bit where your priorities are a little bit in this instance.
For sure. And another important consideration that we had, we did have some people from our community, not in water ski but in other disciplines, within the family of IWWF, that say, okay, you know, if you don't do this because we feel it's not fair, we will not compete against the Belarusian athlete, you know. So if we or Russian athletes, if they've registered at a competition, independent or otherwise, we will not show up. So again, in solidarity with Ukraine. You know, this is not against the individual athletes, and we need to be extremely clear on this. It's against the policies of these countries, which are wrong.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I know of one Belarusian skier concerned. I won't reveal the identity of the skier involved, who has indicated that. That a change of nationalities may be forthcoming with consultation with the Belarusian Water Ski Federation and other parties involved, you know. So, you know, there are skiers, more than one skier, as a matter of fact, that are absolutely desperate to actually get out there and compete, you know. And then you. Even going to that extreme, if necessary.
Yes, we're aware of that. There is a set procedure to do that, and if they follow the procedure and they comply with the requirements, they can do it. It's not for us to decide. You know, the procedure is there. It's just black and white, and if they feel the requirements, they can do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So and I mean, if that comes to pass, then IWWF wouldn't stand in the way or pose any further impediments upon said skier.
Of course not, because again, for the fourth or fifth time, it is not against the skier. Mm-hmm. You know, but you know, how do you? Why do we have to choose between Seth Skier and Danilo? You know, which is better? Which is a better human being? This is a lose-lose situation. You know, why do we have to choose? Why were we put in this horrible situation?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I certainly see your point of view, you know, because I mean, you're not representing just one country; you're representing the whole world that hasn't come out in solidarity with Ukraine against this atrocity, you know. So, people got to bear that in mind. Now, when it comes to the whole world, there is actually an event that will be taking place in July, which is the World Games. We spoke a little bit about this in the previous conversation that I had with you over at the Junior Worlds, and how the organization was going along with that. This event's going to be taking place in Birmingham in Alabama. I think it's the first time it's actually taking place in the United States. Now, from the amount of information that you have from the people on the ground, how's the organization of the water ski section of that event coming along?
Good. Everything. We have a strong presence around the area. It's there are a lot of nice ski schools there, so there will be opportunity for practice for the participants. The event is shaping up very nicely, so we expect no mishaps or any delays there. It will be the site, Ivina, the site. It's a beautiful site. In the 1980s, it was the site of a pro stop event, mm-hmm. a huge one at that. So the site is good. You know, it's skiable, it's well, it's protected, it's deep. So it should provide excellent conditions, which is different to other editions, you know, of the World Games. And speaking of the World Games, again, they are the organizers of this event, the World Games Association, not us. And they did ban, all Belarusian and Russian athletes. We had to adjust our selection criteria, and because we had to exclude all of the athletes because of the World Games organization took the same approach as we took, and the same goes for FISU. FISU had.
I was about to ask you about that too.
The FISU event was slotted for also August in Belarus. FISU decided to cancel the event in Belarus, which was part of the requirements of the IOC, and exclude the athletes. And again, we are not the organizer there. We're just the sanctioning body. So basically, within our little world of the water skiing, all of the touch points that we have with the outside of the community, they individually and independently, they have come to the same conclusion that we have come.
Absolutely. I mean, I can certainly understand from the International World Games Association and also FISU for cancelling. Well, for excluding Belarusian Russian athletes, and obviously the exclusion of the FISU World Water Ski Championships over in Minsk, certainly understand that, because the International Water Ski and Wakeboard Federation doesn't have the supreme power of organization over the events those previously mentioned organizations do. Now, in respect to the World Games, which is rapidly coming up towards July, I mean, some of the initial reports that I had from the folks in Birmingham, not necessarily dealing with our sport in particular, but with just the event, with the entire event as a whole, that they were having some problems financially to executing the event, you know, with the many sports that they have to accommodate and what have you. Being one of the founding members of the International World Games Association, I mean, Have you seen anything going on with the other events that are taking place that would lead to cause for concern about Birmingham's ability to pull this one off?
No. I don't think there's a huge concern about that. There's always concern, but not a big one. And in our case, for example, our initial proposal to the World Games Organization was to leave some legacy behind. You know, we wanted to for them to help us acquire a jump and leave it there at the site. And we also wanted to have a slalom course to be permanently installed there, so we could actually use that site eventually, or the southern region of the U.S. could use that facility to run clinics and to run events and pro events and what have you. But unfortunately, because of budgetary constraints, that is not possible. So there will be very little legacy left behind, because all the hardware will be leased instead of purchased. So that was a little bit of a disappointment. But that decision was made almost a year ago, before everything that we are living today is happening. No, at that time we were only concerned about the pandemic. No.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of the pandemic, I mean, last time we spoke, I mean, it was a huge concern going forwards. You know, I mean, with the World Championships with the Elite World Championships just around the corner, the event that was taking place over at Corey Pickers' place in Santa Rosa Beach, the pandemic was very much in place. You know, a whole bunch of countries that wanted to be a part of both of those World Championships couldn't make it. I mean, I'm making reference to countries that are in Asia, you know, that had strict pandemic rules and stuff like that, and still continue to actually have a fairly strict ruling. In terms of percentage, how close do you reckon we are to resuming like normal service to where we were before, to where we don't have to wear these masks and have all of these vaccinations and that kind of thing, just to basically live a somewhat normal life, you know?
Well, if I had the answer to that, I would have a Nobel Prize on my pocket. But well, in our little world again, I'm very proud to announce that at the junior worlds, we had no positive cases. You know, everybody that went back home had either a PCR or an antigen test. All the tests were negative. The same at the worlds. The people that tested with us, because we did offer testing services at both places, every test was negative. So that's a huge testament to the responsibility of the athletes and their families, that kept their distance, used their masks, were vaccinated, did whatever they needed to do to stay safe, and they did stay safe. So now with the Omicron variant, there's no safe. You know, I am triple vaccinated and I got it in January. So there's no safe place for that, you know. And I think that in my personal view, and again, I'm no doctor, I think this is the way out. You know, these latest variants, like the Omicron and the latest, the 2BA or whatever, are milder if you are vaccinated, are more contagious, but are milder. So I think this pandemic will evolve into another flu. It will be a different type of flu, but it will evolve into a flu, and we should be behind us for the next winter. It should be, you know, you need to get your flu shot, and now you would get that flu shot probably includes some component of a COVID vaccine. No, that's my guess. Mm-hmm. But and what I'm seeing at the international level, you know, on my day job, if you will, I deal a lot with the Orient, with Asia and different countries that I import and export from there, and I see, for example, a couple of the factories I deal with right now, they're in lockdown in China, so in China they are getting a huge uptick of cases. And I hope it's the Omicron getting there, and I hope it's not a new variant coming out of there. You know, I hope it's something coming in and not something coming out, because if it's coming out, then this is never going to end. But if it's just the Omicron coming in, it should, you know, ravage. Well, not ravage, because this is not as lethal. Just go through the population fast enough, and in a month should be out of it, and that should be the end of it. But let's hope it's not something new coming out.
Yeah, because that's all we need, another pandemic, you know, preventing athletes and our sport from resuming a course of normalcy. Now, one of the things that kind of signals normalcy within our sport is the fact that the Moomba Masters actually took place with a strong field of international skiers. And pleased to say, I hadn't heard of any COVID case or anything like that, you know, which is another thumbs up for water skiing. Now, a few weeks prior to that, you probably heard of the whole Novak Djokovic thing. You know, he refused to get vaccinated and tried to plead his case and stuff like that. And I'm sure there are probably one or two athletes out there that are still wanting. Not wanting to take the vaccine for whatever reason, you know, medical exemption, religious, what have you, you know. What is the IWWF's continuing stance on vaccinations in order to be a part of tournaments, whether it be an athlete or an official?
Well, the IWWF, since the very first start of the pandemic, they passed a policy, if you will, that we would follow whatever the local government is applying. You know, if we are competing in the U.S., in Florida, we would follow Florida's rules and requirements. If we go to Singapore, it would be the same. So whatever the local authorities are applying, we would abide by that. So we're basically trusting their science. If the local governments, which have much more resources than us, say that you need to be vaccinated, then, or at least would need to be vaccinated. But we don't have any special rules. We are not requiring anybody to be vaccinated or to wear a mask or to do anything they don't want to do. I think it's just common sense to get vaccinated. You know, you would vaccinate against polio or chickenpox. So we don't, you know, but again, that's up to each individual. We're not here to judge. We don't care. But we don't want anybody to put the rest of the people at risk because of whatever beliefs, religious or otherwise.
I think a lot of what was going on against the vaccine is because the amount of time it took for the vaccine to become available, you know, lack of significant trial period and what have you. They were rushing to get it out, and it wasn't in a lot of people's opinion fully tested to be absolutely 100%, well, close to 100% safe, because I don't think any vaccine is like totally 100% safe, if you really want to ask my opinion on that. But you know, taking that on board, you know, I mean, do you understand a little bit how maybe some athletes are kind of, you know, resistant to taking that, and what would your take on be on that?
No, I completely understand it. You know, I completely understand it, and I agree with it. Again, I if you want to give me 20 shots, I'll take them. So I'm not part of that conversation, I do understand it. I don't think it's far-fetched. I don't think they are idiots. I think, on the contrary, they are concerned and they are doing their research, and I respect that completely. And I tend to agree, you know. For example, when the AstraZeneca, which is one of the ones that I got, started having problems and the Canadian government stopped putting it because they decided it was because of these concerns. So there is some truth to that to some extent, you know. As you say, I think this is one of the safest vaccines ever, but still you have a risk. It's a risk. It's the same risk that you have when you go out to the street and get run over by a bus. You know, it's always risking whatever you do. So you need to see what risks are you happy or comfortable taking, and then take those risks and go about your life the way you feel comfortable. But I think right now we're at the point that if you don't want to get vaccinated by reason of a medical reason, and that's valid, it's fine. We are not imposing vaccine mandates on anyone. We would want everybody to be safe, and we don't want anybody that is an irresponsible guy getting us sick. That's that. I would draw the line there. But as far as the freedom of choice, if we're keeping the distance and all of that, everybody's fine. And as the Canadian Water Ski Association came with a post last year, I don't know if you ever saw it. It was the best I've seen in years. It says social distancing since the 1940s or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, our sport is social distance by nature, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So really we are a very low risk sport. So either you want to be vaccinated or not, I don't think it will make a big difference.
Yeah, we're certainly...
For the rest of the community.
Yeah, we certainly are naturally a social distancer. I mean, the other side of the spectrum, boxing or judo or karate or any of those martial arts, I'm sure they have problems, and I'm sure that you've probably had conversations with a lot of the international sporting federations, because the IWWF is actually a member of the Global Association of International Sporting Federations, and you guys actually meet up on a fairly frequent basis, don't you, to kind of, you know, network and workshop, you know, various issues that might be in common with what water skiing has to deal with on a fairly frequent basis, right?
Well, it's not so frequent, but yes, we do meet. There are quarterly meetings. Now they are virtual, and in the past there were two in-person meetings, one in Switzerland and one wherever. This whatever this year was Ekaterinburg in Russia, and because of everything we've been talking, that has been cancelled. So it's going to become one more virtual meeting, you know.
And I'm sure that when you became part of one of those meetings, probably virtual, whenever the issue of the COVID vaccines and the infection rate in our sport, and whenever you raised and said, hey, we have no infection rate, I'm sure that there was probably some jealous eyes looking towards the sport.
Yes, of course. But you know, we were lucky that way, and that was good, because even in the middle of the pandemic, some countries managed to run their tournaments, you know, nationals or otherwise, so and without risk. So I think, again, being responsible has helped us, definitely.
All right, then. So, before we round off this podcast, the TWBC podcast, last year, the Water Ski Pro Tour kicked off with its inaugural season of number of different events going on around the world. Now it's gotten past the inaugural season. Now we're on to the second one. And I'm sure you've probably had meetings with the stakeholders involved within that initiative. Is there anything different that we can expect within the next calendar year? Or has the format been set, and you know, it's going to be the same kind of format from last season?
No, I think it was a very successful first season. I urged the team that is pushing this behind. You know, we were in conversations 2 or 3 years ago, and the idea was to get this ball rolling. You know, we knew there were going to be a lot of things that needed to be improved and corrected and evolution, you know, have evolved. But the thing was to get the ball rolling. So I think they did an excellent job in doing that. They created a lot of community. They created a lot of expectation through this. The World Ski Broadcasting Company certainly was instrumental. And this is not because you are interviewing me. It's because it's a fact. No, it's really a fact, no, that you're bringing the sport to many other people that probably never had the chance to be exposed to high-end skiing. So that this is part of the goals of the IWWF, to grow the sport. And to grow the sport, we need to show the sport. So we need to make sure that everybody that is on the water knows what the high-end skiers can do. So they want to emulate them. So that was part of my goals. I think the most, the bigger area of improvement that we have for this season, which I don't think we actually were most very successful. I think needs to be more tweaking for the year after and going forward, is the calendar. There has been extremely, how to say, a lot of interest in different organizers. So now the problem that we are having is that we have too many tournaments and too few weekends. Okay. And so we also want to deserve to give the proper exposure to the pro events and also the proper exposure to the title events. So we need to come to grips to how are we going to divide the year, which is a very short year in the Northern Hemisphere, to divide the year so we can all win and have the proper platform for a title event to have the undivided attention of the community, and for a pro event have the undivided attention of the community.
Yeah, but
we need to improve on that.
Yeah, because, I mean, in the Northern Hemisphere, I mean, there's a whole slew of events, and, I mean, you rightly said that the too few weekends, too many events. But to kind of balance that out a little bit, the Southern Hemisphere, I'm figuring would probably see an opportunity for development there, because I mean there's a number of sites that I know of, you know, I mean, like the Miranda site over in Chile, for example, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, quite possibly, you know, that I mean they could. A lot of those places south of the equator could come through and host events in their version of the summer, you know. So I mean, you know, like I say, raft of events in the north, not so much in the south, you know. And I'm sure that would need to be addressed in the immediate future, I would say.
Oh yes, for sure, and I agree with you. You know, when we were dreaming about this initiative. The idea was to start, start in Chile in January, early January, then or move to, you know, New Zealand and Australia for February or March for the Moomba and all of that, and then move again. It could be South Africa or somewhere there, and then start moving upwards and to the U.S. and then round up the year in Europe. But for example, right now we have a problem that. The northern season, which is basically the northern hemisphere summer, you have an American leg, a U.S. leg base, and then a European leg, and then another U.S. leg. So that doesn't make a lot of sense. But again, this is a good problem to have. You know, too many events and too few weekends. I think we can live with that. We need to just get better at organizing this. But it's the worst problem would be to have too many weekends and no events.
Yeah, we definitely don't want too few events. And yeah, I mean, I know already that my summer is going to be packed. Absolutely. As soon as I leave North America and go towards San Gervasio, there is at least three or four events to come afterwards, which is certainly going to be great for exposure for the sport going forward, you know. And you know, that brings me to another point, you know, because the IWWF has consistently tried to put itself in a place where it could potentially be and you know, will probably, you know, to be a part of the Olympic program. And I'm sure some of you are listening to this and said, oh no, not again, not that old chestnut, you know. But but the approach, in my opinion, the approach was the opposite way round. You were looking for the Olympics to provide exposure for the sport, whereas if you get the exposure beforehand, you're in a better position to be invited to the table and maybe given the honor of being one of the few sports that makes it to the Olympic program, whether it be in Los Angeles or Paris.
Yes, in Paris we are not there. We did the rounds. We spent the money. We were not selected. So that's a fact. The Los Angeles program and the Brisbane program, which look more promising. Mm-hmm. The Los Angeles program is very vague. The process is not open yet, so I cannot talk about that. And Brisbane is a dream. It's too far away at this point. My if you recall, I was elected in 2017, and my period finished in October of 2021. I was re-elected there at Traverse, well, at the Congress we had at the Lake County. I was re-elected for 4 years, and I presented my vision after being 4 years in the in the chair and understanding what's happening. And definitely, I am one of those that said, no, 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 not again. I'm not looking for being part of the Olympics, you know. I don't think we need the Olympics to become a better sport. I think it's a nice thing to do. It would be amazing if we ever get there. But it's a very, very, very long shot. And I'm not willing to put resources. We have very scarce resources in a very long shot. I want to put the resources in growing the sport. I want to take a look inside, not to look outside, you know, because if we want sponsors for the pro events and we want sponsors for the title events, if we want to be taken seriously, we need to have a lot more people doing the sport than the number of athletes we have today. So the Pro Tour is one of my tools, I mean, my toolbox to create more awareness and more people getting into the water. And there are many other tools that I have on my toolbox that we're applying, but definitely I'm looking inward. I want to have a strong base. I want to have a strong grassroots presence, a strong number of people doing sports that goes through not just the boat, but the cable. The cable is the one that can give us the masses, the numbers. So, and this is not to say that we're shutting down the boat. No, don't get me wrong. Everything is important, but the bigger potential is on the cable because of the mass nature of that. So we want to put all of these different possibilities to grow the sport. And then once the sport is out, is big enough, then the Olympics or somebody else might look into us. Like for example, started with this effort, for example, there was skateboard is an excellent event. They didn't want to become part of the Olympics. They were forced, so they had to create. They had to create a world organization to regulate the sport because there was none. It was just the kids in the street. But there were so many kids in the street that the Olympic movement say, okay, this is a good market. We want this. So that's why they approached them. So they had to become organized. They had to create a federation. So this is the way it should be. You know, you have the people doing the sport and then you organize. You don't get organized and then create a sport. A sport will never grow like that.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? So that's the approach I'm taking. I want to grow the sport and then worry about the other things.
What about the Paralympics?
Well, the Paralympics is even a longer shot because we don't have many countries. At doing organized sports, you need to be represented throughout the world. We only have 8 or 9 countries participating in the Paralympics. So that is actually impossible, you know. But the one thing that might be a possibility is the Youth Olympics. The Youth Olympics is like a lab for the Olympic Committee to test sports, to test venues. For example, the latest addition for Paris 2024, the only sport that was approved in addition to the ones in Tokyo, the new sports, is breakdancing. Breakdancers got their day in the sun at the Rio Olympic Youth Games in 2018. That's where they were a demonstration sport there. They got noticed by the IOC. They got noticed by the social media. They got millions of views for their events, and now they're in the Olympics. So the next Youth Olympic Games are in Dakar in Senegal in 2026, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an easier place to get in, and it could be our showcase. But by 2026, we should be in a much, much stronger position so we can ask them to include us, even if not an official sport, as a demonstration sport. And there might be our shot.
All right, then. Okay, so look towards the youth for the Olympics is the basic stance there. But anyway, We're going to round off the podcast here. I certainly thank Jose Antonio Perez Priego, the president of the IWWF, for sparing us a few minutes of his time to explain some of the issues going on. And normally I give our podcast guests the opportunity to say thanks and acknowledge people and that kind of stuff. And I will afford that opportunity to you, sir, Jose.
Thank you very much. Well, as you know, the IWWF is a volunteer organization. Nobody collects a salary. So it's, I'm always super thankful for everyone, the presidents of my confederations. You know, we used to meet once a year. We now meet twice a month because we can now do it virtually. So we get a lot of things going. We get a lot of projects moving, and we are reacting super fast now compared to the way it was before the pandemic. So in that regard, the pandemic has been good for us, if you will. Also, in particular, you know, the guys that help us through the World Championships in Florida, obviously the Travers family, Paul Fong, which is our executive director, and Ross Dixon, which is our sport business manager. Those two guys were, you know, well, you saw them, you probably drank with them, you mm-hmm. know, they were there every day for weeks before and for weeks after, and they made sure that everything went smoothly, and I have no words to thank them. You know, I actually, we did recognize them with the President's Award earlier this year.
All right, then. That was Jose Antonio Perez Priego. My name's been Tony Lightfoot. This has been the latest edition of the TWBC podcast. And with that, and until next time, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.